From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. There's a new record by a somewhat unexpected mix of musicians who call themselves Atoms for Peace. The band members include Tom York and Nigel Godrich, who you know from Radiohead, Flea, who you know, of course, from Red Hot Chili Peppers, and you may have heard the Brazilian percussionist Mauro Refosco. He's toured with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And then there's Joey Warnecker. He's played with R.E.M., Elliott Smith, and Beck. Quite a group of musicians, really. The band formed around 2009 in support of Tom York's solo album, The Eraser. And now they have their own record coming out at the end of February. It's called Amok. This past summer, Tom, Nigel, and Joey were in New York City, and I was in our studios here in Washington, D.C. We chatted about how they make their music, about DJing a party, and more. Just a quick note to say that this interview contains a few four-letter words, and I say that particularly for parents who tell me they love listening to our show with their kids, so I'm just giving you a heads up. The conversation here starts as we're getting sound levels for the guests in New York, and they notice some cameras in our New York bureau.
Maybe it won't.
I don't think we'll be on the webcam.
I think, no, I mean, for whoever's watching.
Oh. That's not fair. They get to watch and we don't.
I know. It's very kind of Big Brother.
Huh. Speaking of Big Brother.
Here you are. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How is everybody?
Good.
We can't see you, can we?
No.
We can't hear ourselves either.
Okay, we'll get there.
It feels like you're in my head, though.
I am in your head. And you've been in my head all day and night and last night.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. I can hear you now.
It happens.
Turn it out.
So, is Joey there?
Yes.
Great. Nigel?
I am here.
Awesome. Tom?
Yes.
Great.
So, I'd ask Nigel loads of complex stuff because he's just got out of bed.
Oh, good. So, how long are you in New York for?
Oh, the weekend.
Excellent. So, have you seen any music yet?
No. We're going to DJ tonight, and tomorrow night we're DJing at MoMA.
PS1.
When you do a DJ set, do you are you trying to get people dance, or are you trying to fill them with their ears with great texture? What's going on there?
I'd say get them dance.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I look at it anyway. Mm.
So what would you put on first?
Oh.
Oh.
That's a tough question.
That really depends on
if
who
I could see you, I could tell you. I don't know what you look like.
I'm just a guy. I don't have hair. I play too many electronics, and I don't have any hair.
I don't really. I don't know.
There's a connection, by the way.
We don't really know how we started doing it. We just sort of started doing it for a laugh, really. I mean, I got back into it really, so I didn't have to talk to anyone.
Yeah, it does. It's great. You do actually have a role at the party, you know. Where you, yeah,
I can feel like I belong, but I don't have to connect.
You know, I think that's the plight of so many musicians, or people who DJ, is that they want to find some place to fit in. They want a role, but they're shy people or reserve.
There's also the issue of like walking to a party and music is so shit.
Yeah, actually, that's what happened. What I found, like, I started DJing because my friend is a sort of a promoter in LA, and he just is always doing parties. He said, "Oh, do you fancy having a go?" And I thought, sure, I'll have a go. But it's almost like, you know, when people come around to your house and you get to choose what to put on the stereo, you know, it's that kind of, it feels nice.
There's nothing more satisfying than filling a room with the right thing at the right time, though, I think.
And that's true of live music, too. When you, I mean, you're not going out to clubs maybe for bands and stuff this time, but when you go see a group, I'll start with Nigel, just so people know whose voice is who here. Nigel, when you go and hear live music, what do you hope to hear? What would excite you? What would go home and say, wow?
That's a tricky question, isn't it?
Get harder.
Really? This is an easy one.
You won't believe this.
Okay. I get the warm up. What do I hope to hear? I mean, I hope to be surprised. I hope to see something I'm not expecting, actually. So I go in without any preconceptions, hopefully. Hopefully leave with a, you know, and see something that I haven't seen before. I mean, that's the thing that I respond to most of all these days, is just some originality, because it's such a sort of, it's a hard thing to do, I think, depending on what the show, I mean, if it's somebody I don't know. If it's a band that I do know, then I just want to, I want to hear the hits, man.
Is that true?
I know, I just, you know, I mean, it's
English sarcasm, sorry.
Thanks, good.
He can point that out every time.
I can't see your face, it's really hard.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I think it's wrong to walk into any situation with any preconceptions or expectation, so especially music is really, it's a really hard one because it's so intangible. But I would hope to be carried away in a way that I couldn't explain to you with words.
Are there any bands that that may have happened to recently for any of you, I guess.
I mean, honestly, I saw the Chili Peppers in Paris like a month ago, and it was an amazing gig.
You remember that Giles Peterson thing we went to?
What was Giles doing?
He puts together every year. He puts together a few bands and
it
stuff.
Was like an awards thing for
it
his
was
show.
Awards thing, yeah. Worldwide awards, and there were some amazing acts that night.
And for people who don't know, Giles Peterson is a DJ that's very influential back home for you guys.
Yes, he is. He's well, it's really important to a lot of the music I listen to because he crosses a lot of different areas, jazz, Afrobeat, and he's a frightening expert on both of those, and then like a lot of the current stuff as well.
He's sort of like a sort of contemporary, in a way, he's a kind of a John Peel for the sort of modern generation, I would say. You know, he has that sort of ability to just
it's
play
more
things. Because
he's much more dance-orientated than John Peel.
Which is sort of, but it's like more appropriate to this kind of generation. Yeah, this sort of mode of music that
and
we're in now.
You mentioned the Afrobeat stuff and music you hear from Giles Peterson. The opening cut for the new record, can I play that for a bit? And I just want to sort of talk about, first I want to talk about the guitar. Maybe we'll break some of this music down. I'm going to play it. I'm going to keep your mics open, but let's give it a little bit to breathe and then I'll pull it down and we'll talk over it for a little bit. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Number one. Oh, sorry. Do it again.
Straight in at number one.
Timing's everything. All right. Hit it. Let's start with the guitar. We'll come back and play a little bit more. But it was at the beginning of the tune. I'm just thinking that maybe that's where the tune started. But who's playing it? And it feels very South African to me.
No, it was not the beginning of the tune. Oh, what was the beginning of the tune?
Yeah, well,
we did this thing. We were out on tour for a couple of weeks.
What year are we talking? 2010,
apparently. We had an absolute blast from doing it. There was loads of energy to it. And that. So we went into the studio at the end with not a lot. Kind of nothing at all. And the only thing we had to go on was like a few basically little laptop bits.
That we would come up with, yeah.
Yeah.
And Mauro Rufusco, is that how you say his name? Mm-hmm. Percussionist, go on.
Yeah, we just had these little ideas that Tom had come up with, and we'd been on tour getting used to playing with each other and developing a chemistry, and then we were able to do that in the studio and translate what we were doing live to some new material.
Well, let's talk. It's really hard, I know, to go back and sort of imagine this blossom at this point where this thing became this thing, right? Like, so somewhere something started. Is it possible at all to sort of you said there's something on a laptop. Was it their synth line? Was it a rhythm? Was it a
no, all it was a basic sketch for a rhythm, and then Joey and Mauro do this freaky thing which I've never seen before, but apparently people do, where Joey's even got your own language for how you write down the rhythms, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Complete gobbledygook to me. So they would sit there and they'd score this stuff out, this laptop thing, and they kind of went in and played it. And as soon as it sort of comes to life, then Flea and I basically respond to that, because that's like what Joey's saying about we're sort of building up this sort of way that we connect to each other musically, and so it was that, it was pursuing that idea, and there was this little glimmer of a piano thing in it. And Flea picks up on that on the bass line, and then I responded to that, and this all basically happens. We're not thinking about this. We basically went into the studio. It was the old jazz idea of, well, it was sort of Miles Davis thing of like just free form, and we'll, you know, when things pass by, we'll pick up on them that work. And
basically, we did an intensive sort of 3-day thing to just generate a lot of material that we could then go away and listen to. And Tom had a few things sort of just floating around that were on his laptop, rhythms that he'd made, and then it was just go. So for example, this song, the bit that you hear, the riff might have been happening for 5 minutes of a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
If that.
You know, if that, exactly. Because what you end up with is a very small piece, like a slice of the music that then gets kind of distilled down into something taken away. I think, you know, Tom, he listens to stuff in his car and he thinks about melodies and, you know, and it all, you know, we periodically, we'd get together every few weeks.
And just a bit, it was bonkers, to be honest. The really wild thing about it was how much material we generated in 3 days.
Yeah, it was insane. there's still a ton of it left. I'm still going.
I'm literally still going.
Oh, amazing.
Because it's just it was playing every day, all day. I mean, you know, these guys are
every day, all day.
And then you
exhausted.
I assume then you listen. Somebody pulls out as Nigel as your title in that's listed production and programming sounds so sterile, but you are in some ways you. I would think you're the sort of the miner, the guy who's like digging through. Maybe
the child.
You are.
I guess that's my contribution. I mean, I hear things as they go past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So does Tom, but I mean I can't
see. Nigel picks up on them immediately. And it takes me, I will listen to the same thing 10 times and then I'll start seeing. It's like Nigel's really fast and he doesn't allow me to go back. So like, so he'll choose a bit, this bit's good, this bit's good, and this bit's good. I'm like, yeah, oh yeah, but what about that bit back then?
Well,
and then do you, Nigel, then play this for the band and then you all work on that part again? Is that?
Well, yeah, I mean, there wasn't time to do that at the time.
Right.
I mean, what you know, the faster you can work, the better it generally is. I mean, because our brains are only able to make like one layer of decisions. So you try and make these choices very, very early on, then you end up with a pile of choices of lots of different things. And then what would happen? Well, because everybody's in LA and Tom and I were in England, so we just got together and just sort of listened back to what we had and then sort of, like I said, just distill it down to like a shorter version that he takes away, goes and thinks about melodies, and then we get together again. Mm. Then we came back to LA and we were working at Joey's place for a bit, doing the same thing sort of instrumentally by like going back to parts, you know, rhythmic parts and musical parts, and doing the same sort of thing. We're like refining them or changing, you know, because they've developed, you know. Yeah.
But it was really fun, you know, hanging out at Joey's house and all this, these rhythms just coming out of the speakers all the time. And it was, we needed to add so little to give you a way in, which I loved, you know. It was like so much, it was just there, you know, a lot of the time. So,
When he says Miles Davis, he's probably, I mean, I'm assuming, you know, they, very famously, they made a record that was all like this. It was just a bunch of jams, and the art was in the editing, putting things together in a silent way, you know. And it's like that thing, it always springs to people like us, always use that as a reference, because it is such a freeing method, you know, and it's a way of like getting musicians to bring out the best in people, you know, to just have no kind of limitations or, you know, to not be pinned down. It's very fun. And it's very productive.
But also, if you're going about something where you're, you know, so much of what the Atoms for Peace thing is like the revelation of like Joey and Mauro translating these electronic beats
absolutely
into this new thing that we didn't have, and how musically the five of us then respond to that, and. Like, okay, how do we carry on with this? So it's so much about the rhythm side of things anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So to me, I wanted, like, don't ask me for songs. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't need that shit. You know, I can hear it in, like, you know, you walk into rehearsal or in soundcheck one morning and, like, you know, Flea started up a bass line and Joey's doing this thing on the kick. You're like, shit, man, that's there. It's ready to go. You know? Right. And it was just a really... it was really different for me. I'd never had that before.
That's awesome. Like, can I play like another cut top of the song Dropped for a minute? I want to ask you about, you're talking about rhythms and so forth, and I want to just ask you about something, because playing real percussionist playing with electronics is a challenge, and I just want to play this for a minute and talk about it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You want to get to the bit where it breaks out, do you really?
Yeah.
I do that, but I also just... If people listen to what is that, which is a, sort of an arpeggiated sound on maybe it's a Moog or maybe it's an Arbodacy or something.
It's not bad, is it?
That's impressive.
And then, well, my first instrument was an Arbodacy, so I'm partial to those and know those sounds. But one of the things that always drove the drummer of my band crazy whenever I would do something like that is he could never play along with the pulse of a synth. It was just like the hardest thing on the planet. Yeah. And you've all sort of licked that. And so I'm wondering two things. I'm wondering, did that pulse from the synth come first and the percussions play on top of it? That's question one.
Well, it all comes in different directions.
But in this piece, do you remember?
Well, I mean...
And I guess I ask that because it's so hard and you do it so well to play real percussion on top of something that's so stilted.
Should we tell
him? I knew I'd get there. Come on, tell me.
Well, I mean, because there's times when we're blurring it so you can't tell what's electric and what's not.
So why... you have to guess.
Where's the real percussion coming in?
Okay. Well, I don't know if you're hitting on rubber that's triggering electronics or what's going on here. It's also a great sound on headphones.
That's just the original beat.
Yeah.
It's so programmed.
You say programmed. Who said that?
This is programmed, this bit.
Yeah.
Because we found that a lot of the time that it was it was like no matter how tight, I mean, because Joey and Amaro, they can play that, no worries. But it was actually the sound would be the reason. So we'd choose it simply over the sounds rather than anything else.
So where do they come in?
And also, they come in at the end of this tune.
Okay, can we skip it? Let me just skip ahead because I want to hear that. And... magic.
Barry's in there. He's in there. Joey's playing in there. Okay. That's Joey.
Oh, yeah.
And Mara's doing this sweeping up sound.
What is he playing?
Oh, there's a break and you hear him very.
What is it?
He's got this spring. Thing that looks a little bit it's like spring, the inside of a washing machine. Here it is, listen. It's that thing. There.
It's a bunch of kitchenware, right?
Yeah. Basically.
Yeah. He's doing his. Yeah.
I mean, there actually is a name for that thing.
Reiko, kitchen Reiko. Sink.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, it's a Brazilian instrument. So it's basically it's just a spring.
Cool.
Oh yes, with the horn on the end. It's that one.
A spring with a horn on the end.
Yeah.
he plays with what? Furrow in the Dark. I think is where I know that name, but I'm not.
Yeah, that's right.
Anywhere else I might know him from, and he's not with us today in the studio.
Yeah, well, he played with David Byrne for years and years.
Oh, on the Brazilian.
Okay. Yeah, he started there, and I think he stayed. I think he kept him because he's such a. But I mean, to be fair, it's the like Maro, for example, when we did the initial recording. There's so much stuff that gets sprayed liberally on everything and you just happen to pick a song where he wasn't on it and Joey wasn't on it for the first part. But actually, it's kind of all over everywhere. That song, I think it's because that had sort of existed for a while and it had a beat, and then you rightly point out that the arpeggiated keyboard was the way into writing a vocal melody. We needed to put some music on it because all it was a beat. But they're all there. Every single one is different. That's the thing.
And it's like an ongoing. It's difficult because, the thing I'm most excited about is the fact that now there is a band to this, and it's not just Tom with his laptop and Nigel putting it together, and that's that. And there's much more energy and much more of a.
Well, it's fun. There are people in a room.
It's a fun. Yeah, you've got a goal as well. Do you know what I mean? You've got a thing that you're heading towards. It's like you're and I think I should say as well. The other thing about that, for example, is. Even if, for example, it just ends up being, a programmed beat for like a couple of minutes in the song, that's not because we didn't all play on it at one point and that didn't inform what happened. It became sort of formed as a result of all the things, and sometimes you take a step back because you realise that something is overdone. Sometimes you add things that aren't there. And it's really a mixture of the whole thing. Really, we were making a record, and really we were making a record to play. And one that had, when we first started working on the new material, it was after we did the first couple of shows, and we realised we just didn't have enough stuff. So we went, we could only do like an hour show. So we went away and sat down and started sort sketching out things.
No, you're right.
Sketching out things that we could then take to the band, you know? And that's how it happened. We took it back to the band. We started playing these things in the room in rehearsals and stuff, and then we did the recording session. So then we ended up having like a sort of complete electronic version of something, complete analog version of something, and it was the fun bit was like working out what works the best.
Yeah,
but with the knowledge that it came from that mm-hmm. from that brainstorming session with everybody together. So whatever we end up with, it's something that's going to work, and that's the really exciting part mm-hmm. is the idea of playing it.
But could you imagine, like, you're on stage and somebody just starts an idea and you do what you did in some of these sessions. Could you imagine having something unfold that you had no idea where it was going to go? I mean, when you're going to do a concert, you're going to do these songs that came out of these long sessions. Could you imagine as a band doing a piece of music that was actually just, let's see what happens?
Are you talking about jamming?
Well, I mean, you could. Well, I mean, okay.
I've got rules about that shit.
Well, tell me about those rules, and because there are two things that happen as an audience person. We talk right at the top about what do you want to see when you go to see a band. You want to see a surprise, and even as a player on stage, one of the most amazing things is when something happens that you don't expect to happen. Granted, that can happen in the format of having a song that you know beginning, middle, and end, where it's going to go. Those surprises can happen, but. One of the things, jamming has such a terrible connotation to it for so many people, right? And you were going to tell me about your rules, but there's something amazing when you're in an audience and something happens and two musicians all of a sudden start communicating on something they had no idea was going to happen.
To me, it's like rhythmically jamming is great, mm-hmm. you know? Jamming when it means some guy with a guitar mm-hmm. and a distortion pedal. You know,
right.
I'm not down with that.
Right, but we have other instruments.
Yes. No. Exactly. No. It's kind of.
We get to see that we have that experience when we rehearse. You know, mm-hmm. when we're working out. You know, there's 10 different ways of doing things, and the joy is like playing it and figuring stuff out.
Fleet is arch jammeister. You know, it's true. Like literally, every time we get together, the first hour is like, well, that's what we do, but like. To me, I'm like, maybe, you know, sometimes actually stuff could, you know, I could see maybe stuff coming out, but to me it's like, well, no, you're limbering up. That's literally what you're doing.
Just clearing your throat.
Just like you're being in, you're in the gym, you're warming up.
Also, the amazing thing is like listening to Mauro trying to play something impossible. Like you can play him some like crackly white noise and he'll try and play it.
Right.
And that's when he's an amazing percussion player, but he shines at that. I mean, that's the stuff that you talk about going to a gig and being surprised. I mean, I feel like originally, you know, when we got the band together, it was Tom had this idea about getting a band together to play the Eraser, you know, an album that was made like 4 years before. Mm-hmm. But he just sort of said, oh, I'm just obsessed with this idea about getting like Latin percussion player and getting like getting Joey specifically, you know, because we've known
Joey.
No, because he wants to play with Joey. You know, Joey and I, you know, we've worked together for a long time. Like Joe and I met when we were recording Mutations, you know, it was a long time ago. And, mm-hmm. you know, I just left that whole experience absolutely ranting about him because. To Tom, you know, so for years, you know, it's like the best drummer I've ever worked with, you know, it's just incredible.
And
Tom had to listen to me yapping.
You guys give each other a big hug.
Yeah, we're actually sitting on each other's laps at the moment.
Yeah.
And anyway, but so what happened was when, you know, in the process of trying to play, it's a kind of genius idea, you know, taking the Eraser, taking something very electronic and playing it acoustically. And what we found was that the sound of them doing that is something I've never heard before. You know, something that no one's ever tried before. So you can jam, but in a way, the more interesting stuff is when you have those, you know, you give Mauro a beat, and then when he's jamming, in inverted commas, it's not like a jam. It's not like he's just going off on one. He's trying to play something, but what he plays is not the thing. It's just something else really, really interesting.
Well, do you remember that time you were in that... in your studio and I just played that bleepy thing and you played that beat on top?
Yeah, and it's an element of just kind of reinterpreting sounds and it's definitely improvisational and it's something transcendent about, you know, just jamming, of course. But yeah, to me that's exciting when there's a little more structure. I mean, I kind of like the best of both worlds personally. And you know, going back to like when you see a show, that's when it's really, really exciting.
Well, when you go out and do this as a tour, this record, at some point you're going to do that. How much will you leave free? How much does I don't know, do you have a sequencer running behind you so you're locked into something? Never.
No, and that's people say to us, they say, oh, yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah, it's cool. You play. People think that we're playing to tracks.
Uh-huh.
And it's not. It's because...
So yeah, crazy experience for me as a drummer. I mean, you know, I've definitely dabbled with that because, you know, I'm just interested in all the different ways of doing it. But playing with... Well, with Mauro, but with all of us, I mean, we're all trying to do as much as we can to you know, serve the music, and yeah, it just ended up sounding kind of enormous.
Well, to me, it's like going back to what we were just saying before about the whole jamming thing or the improvisation thing. It's like the whole key to it for me, really, is the tension you get between the machines and the human response to them, and how these guys, they work very fast. They'll just hear something and they're on it. And Joey especially is, I'm able to sort of just play a bleep with no one or two or no. Like, the running joke in the band is where's the one, but you know I get that everywhere I go now. But Joey will just spark up on something straight away, like, and it's one of the tunes I'm working on at the moment, which is not on this record or anything. It just completely stuns me, and the way he just responded to this little pattern and made something really small, poxy and laptopy into something ridiculously enormous, simply in the act of like his human response to what it was. And when the sort of atoms formed and we're doing the raisin thing, this was around the same time that I'd started DJing and discovered that I liked the ideas around the dubstep thing. But it was really annoying me that there was no human element to it at all. And it was also really obvious the crossover between it and the old Afrobeat rhythms. So it was all just sort of gelling in my head quite a lot, you know. And when we discovered there was like this quite a lot of energy that when we played together, there was this crazy energy, and how actually the one thing that we all really identified with was kind of the Afrobeat thing. I was like, whoa, we're kind of really on something. When we went around to Flea's house and played pool all night and listened to Fela Kuti, it was like, okay, this is good. I couldn't have asked for anything better than this. Because it's like, it was just a real jump-off point, you know. Like, it started off with like a laptop album, all made in headphones with confined beats and confined structure, and then suddenly it's become this other thing completely. But yet... it's always kind of informed by that.
It's unusual. See, it's panoramic. It just becomes like something very kind of colorful.
And his performances live was like this monster machine behind him. Yeah. This rhythm. It was unbelievable.
What are you talking about, Flea?
No, I'm sorry. I was talking about Fela Kuti.
Oh, yeah.
Just seeing.
Same thing.
Fela Kuti.
Topless, you know what I'm saying?
once you had that bass going on, BASE or BASS, but once you had that bass there, anything could happen on top of it. There was so much freedom for all the other players to do stuff.
Yeah, except he'd do those keyboard solos that went on a bit longer.
Yeah, it was 1970s. Couldn't help it. This is maybe a silly question, but I think about this sometimes when I hear musicians that get together, you never would have imagined getting together. And anybody tackle this, who cares to, which is this sort of happenstance? Did it happen because you desired it to happen? Or do any of you believe in fate, that you all in some way, shape, or form were fated to play together?
Maybe. Yeah, because, I mean, each musician sort of, we all came to it in different ways. I mean, obviously Nigel and I knew each other, and actually we'd hung out with Joe. I'd hung out with you a lot, and I'd met you when you were playing
with
REM.
Where'd you hang out with Joey?
Yeah. Joey. First met you playing with REM, right?
Yeah.
We rehearsed together with REM.
That's absolutely right.
When Bill left. Yeah, that was very surreal.
Quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Flea was like one of the things that actually got me thinking about doing it properly was bumping into Flea in London, a show, and him and John were going on about the raise, and I was like, really? Remember, because we both went to see them, and like, how did you do that? We're like, oh well, it was it took us hours, not, you know. We were sort of, gave us, it was sort of like, wow, they really like it.
Hours.
He's trying to play that now.
Yeah. All right,
fair enough.
Yeah, but no, it's funny, isn't it? Because Flea's a big fan of electronic music as well. It's funny, you know, he's like a massive Aphex Twin fan.
Yep.
Right.
And he's, you know, he's really up on all that kind of stuff, whatever. And I know that, like, when the thing about the Eraser as an album, and you'd said this to me before as well, you're thinking about all the bass lines, all those things that you think are bass lines on the Eraser, even if they're not. So you need to have that kind of aggressiveness, that sort of attack, to be able to really translate
the lead lines, you know.
Exactly.
And how many bass players do you know that are lead line? How many bass players play like their lead lines? Not many. So,
but they're the best ones.
Well, yeah.
My favourites, anyway.
But also, with this record as well, like, there's sort of a link with the whole back to reggae thing as well, where the chord structures or whatever, the filling out of the chords of the tune, fairly minimal, and the melodic lines of the bass lines and blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And again, the same with the sort of Afrobeat thing, where, like, the bass lines are the melodic lines a lot of the time, even though they might splinter into guitar lines, where you're setting something off, like setting a trance off. So then you have the link with the dance music thing, where you know, again, the bass lines are lead lines and the chords are like, oh, shut up.
No, that makes sense. No, it's true. I mean, it's a line running through it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that he basically Flea has those influences and drives as a player, but then he also has that aggression, so he can translate the stuff originally from the Eraser. And then it's kind of interesting, because it's kind of the way that you think about when you write bass lines, you write those kind of parts.
I'm trying to be Flea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's funny, you're it's doing an impression of him, chance. Doing an impression of, yeah. You know, whatever.
And then in life, he's doing an impression of me.
You doing an impression
of him. Hilarious.
No, sorry, no, it's true though. When I go back and listen to the Eraser, those lines, you know, it's like, oh, Flea was really the perfect, like, kind of the only person I could imagine doing it.
Yeah,
you know.
It sounds like this music for all of you, in some way, shape, or form, is doing something for you that music you play, what other projects you might have, is just, it's bringing something else out of you that doesn't happen in whatever projects you've been in before. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I mean, personally speaking, I'm very conscious of trying to maintain it as, you know, for kicks, so that it doesn't become like, okay, chaps, we have a career. We have to do this and this and this in order to open this door and this door. It's like, nope, we're going to be completely selfish about it, have a really good time, and then take a break.
But also the other thing is, it does have a real, I mean, talking about like bunches of musicians getting together and just doing whatever they want for fun. I mean, it is that, but it also does have something valid happens. I mean, I feel anyway, it's like, it's not just, you know, a super group in inverted commas. It's like, you know what I mean? It, like, it comes together. It comes together and something happens that is unusual and special. I really think that. And I really think that's the reason why it's happening. If it was, you know, it's got to be substantial,
right?
Because it wouldn't work. We wouldn't. I don't think any of the people would want to be involved in anything like that. Unless
I think
really
that the only reason that people, this whole supergroup thing, is just because there's me and there's Flea and there's blah blah blah. So you go, I mean, that was one of the weird things when we initially started out. Like, loads of Chili Peppers fans were like, "No, he can't do this. No," and I had the same things. Like, "How dare he? Like, what?"
Yeah, well, then I think when people saw it, they totally understood, you know. And I've never had so many people come up to me and say, "Oh, wow, I thought, you know, that was the weirdest idea, but actually, it's something really amazing about it," you know, because of the energy between you two.
Hmm. But then it's just a personal thing. It's like hanging out with Joey for years and finally getting to work with
having
him.
Having an opportunity
like
to, yeah, and you sort of manufacture that opportunity, actually, is what happens.
Yeah.
But that's great, isn't that great? That, you know, we're able to do that.
Yeah, well, I look forward to seeing you all live.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully you'll be back to the States for that.
We will.
We're going to lose our studio time in about
one
minute. So otherwise I'd sit for a while. But
no,
anyway,
we'll
sorry I couldn't be in New York for you to do this in person. I really wanted to.
Next time we'll do something in person, yeah?
Thank you. I'd love that.
Okay.
Cheers, all.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.